Welcome, Carm Capriotto here with Remarkable Results Radio's podcast episode 427. I'm with Vin Waterhouse. Now, I hadn't seen Vin in over 20 years, and we caught up at the TST big event in spring 2019. As you would expect, a very informative discussion about your success. Now, here's a taste.
Technicians are the gifted craftspeople.
Right.
And that and knowing business numbers and measurements rarely come in the same package, Carl.
Yeah,
and that's what we try to fill the business part. A generation ago, they didn't need to know the numbers.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, Carm here, and Remarkable Results Radio is proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. Now, join Napa in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, and discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry. They do it upright. This is an event you don't want to miss. Contact your Napa store and get all the information you need to sign up. I recommend to use your podcast listening app to be sure you're not a short listener. Now, if you don't have the time to catch the entire episode at once during your commute or even catching 30 minutes on the treadmill, do it in shifts. Now, when you leave your app, it remembers where you left off so you can get back to it. Now, why I mention it is that these aftermarket lessons bring value throughout the entire episode. Now, some of the best discussion, for example, with Vin, is at the end of our talk. Find the talking points from this interview with Vin Waterhouse and his bio at remarkableresults.biz/E427. Hey, Vin Waterhouse is an old friend, and I know for a fact that he can deliver a passionate message and help the service professional find their profit stride. We covered some important and sacred ground as it relates to the success or lack of it in our professional service industry. You'll hear some disturbing stats on profitability, and he also talks about the shift to sell more labor than parts. Now, I know you get that, but that's the reason to make these changes. It's time. Hey, a generation ago, the shop owner didn't need to know the numbers. How the world has changed. And in this episode with Vin Waterhouse, I hope, as with all my discussions with business consultants and coaches, we'll push you to make the important changes that will catapult you from having a hobby or a job into a career that rewards you for your hard work. Hey, Carm here at TST again, 2019. Great event. Wow, 678 people here. Thanks to G. Trulia for his support in having me here and hanging out with a ton of just unbelievable industry professionals. I hooked up with an old friend of mine who did the keynote speech, Vin Waterhouse. Hey, Vin.
Hey, Carm.
Nice to have you here. Man, 20 or more years ago, I had you out at my place teaching the service professional all about the labor factory and gross profit margins, which was, people always thought they knew what gross margin was back in the day, right?
Right.
You really had a very positive effect on the service professionals out of my good old hometown. And you went in a particular way, in fact, how successful of a career you've had working with Napa and the Napa Auto Care System. Wow.
I've been pretty fortunate. In the year 2000, I have a handshake agreement with Napa that I do training for them only nationwide. I've done all the 48, Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, Canada. Anybody can go to my classes. They go through Napa. I just don't do it for any other part supplier.
Right. How many do you think in the last, almost 20 years?
How
many people, how many seminars? I mean, did you ever keep track?
Well, I do, but I have a large email list that people send in.
Well, there's a good indicator.
Yeah, and probably touched over 20,000 people.
Wow, good for you. I'm thrilled. I'm happy. And you know what? We can't get enough business management training. We can't, how many in our industry, Vin, and you know this more and better than I do, were just phenomenal technicians that decided to branch out and open their own place. And they got hit upside the head with the challenges it takes to run a great business. And here comes, the business coaches and the trainers in our industry, a cottage industry that was born out of the fact that our guys need help.
It started in the late 80s, and I guess we realized that gifted craftspeople is what our technicians are, the gifted craftspeople.
Right.
And that and knowing business numbers and measurements rarely come in the same package, Carl.
Yeah,
and that's what we try to fill the business part. A generation ago, they didn't need to know the numbers.
So you told, we had dinner last night at Pasquale Rigoletto's. What a phenomenal dinner it was. And we sat next to each other, drank some wine, and caught up. And one of the things that I asked you, and I always wish I had a roving mic when I'm hanging out with friends in the industry or influencers like you. And I said, where were you at the time when the labor factory bubbled up? And I think you told me you were driving on a road in Connecticut or something?
It's a crazy story. I've been in the automotive aftermarket my entire life, ever since college. And there's only one job I really hated. And I used to have to put together promotions all the time.
For a parts distributor, by the way.
For a parts distributor, okay. Yes. This company is called ITT AutoWise. And I had to put together promotions. They were called JSA. And every month it would be buy 12 of these and you get a free watch. Or buy 10 of these and you get work boots. Or you get vests.
I remember.
And I pitied myself. I was having a pity party. And this is how my company started. On the way to Connecticut in the car, and I started looking at the industry. And I said, look, the manufacturer makes a product. They sell it to the distribution center, who sells it to the repair shop, to the parts store, rather, and the parts store sells it to the repair shop. And you have these manufacturers spending God knows how much money with all these promotions and the paper and the manpower and all the things that go. And I thought to myself, many of them don't even have any idea how a shop runs. And I got thinking, when we make sales quota, we just want them to buy parts. If it's to get a 10% sales increase, we don't care if they're brake lines or brake shoes or brake pads. It didn't matter what it was. And so I flipped it in my head and I said, the repair shop is really the number one, and nothing is sold till he or she installs it on a vehicle and gets paid for it.
Then, so envision a pyramid, right? So what you did is you put the service professional at the top of the pyramid.
Exactly.
Got it.
And then I said, everything else is sort of like pushing a rope. If we can help this shop make 11 repairs today instead of 10, he or she has no choice. They have to buy 10% more parts. Conversely, if they make 9 repairs a day instead of 10, all the promotions in the world, we're still going to have a 10% sales decrease.
Right.
And it was that simple. And I said to myself, it can't be that simple. People way smarter than I am had to figure that out. And I started writing it down. And then I pulled over to the side of the road after I went through a toll booth. And I started writing all this down.
It just came out. It just flowed.
Just flowed. And I said, how do we use the marketing resources rather than 10 U joints and a free watch? Use those resources to get the consumer to go to a shop. Then we help him make that 11th repair today instead of 10. Now we have our 10% sales increase,
right.
And the shop owner wins first.
Not only can they do 10% better, but you taught them how to. I mean, it was the how and the why to do this. The why was the great results in improved net operating income, and the how was learning how to set a good labor rate and how to grow the top line. Ultimately, paying the technicians more money, was that part of it?
Well, if you want a good output, you're going to have to pay a few people.
Bingo.
Exactly. I always say, if you should have the highest payroll in town, not the lowest, and the output will more than pay for it.
Yeah, I want you to come on the show a few times. Hopefully, we can work this out. And there's so much to talk about based on some of the statistics that you brought me today, which are unnerving. It's not happy with what I saw, where the industry's average KPIs, if you will, or statistics are alarming. However, today you gave the keynote speech, and I was in the audience and I watched it, and you only had 20 minutes to do 2 hours worth of something, but the message was so, so strong, and I think it's one of those messages, Vin, that has to get out there. And let me tell the audience succinctly what it was. Since there's less parts today being sold with a diagnostic hour of labor, the industry is missing the profit on the part side and billing that part because there's less. And you basically said, hey, listen, guys, you got to have these variable labor rates, and you've got to have labor rates that exclude parts, but you just can't pick an arbitrary number. So you actually went through the math as to how someone, once they knew what their efficiency was and they knew what their, I think, Was it cost per build hour? I can't quite remember exactly what it was, but I was so impressed with how to set the labor rate, not arbitrarily, but through a formula. And that will, as you said, it will make up the gap in the profit that you would be losing had you not done it that way.
Right. If I can, just give the reason for that.
Sure.
The vehicles have evolved it's been gradual, but it's like smoking cigarettes for 30 years. You don't know it one cigarette at a time.
Right.
But over the last 20 years or so, we do benchmarks for Napa. It's called the Napa Auto Care Financial GPS. Mm-hmm. And we do this numbers for the average shops and the average of the top 25% most profitable shops in the country. A couple of things stood out. One of them is astounding. The high profit firms did $57,000 more in sales than the average size shop, but their net profit is $91,000 higher. It almost sounds impossible, but they do multiple things. And what's happened is those people have addressed the way the vehicles are. So way back when, in Dad's generation, we sold a lot more parts per driven mile. If you think of the tune-up, it was mentioned today. Yeah. In the old days, people bought, they did a tune-up every 12,000 miles. So if you had a V8, you bought, sold, or installed 96 spark plugs in 100,000 miles, and then you threw the vehicle away. Right. Well, how many spark plugs do we sell in 100,000 miles today? Very little. We don't sell exhaust anymore. It's stainless steel. And parts per driven mile are down, even though ticket average is up. Shops are less profitable. The average shop's net profit right now, and I believe we've bottomed out, is at 1.99% after everything.
Scary.
The average of the top 25, 1 in 4, is 13.18%. But they have come down over the last 10 years. And I believe the reason is the vehicles. We sell less parts per driven mile. And here's an example of that. There's work breaks in three categories: standard, labor-intensive, and diagnostic. Standard work is where shops made all their money. It was mechanical repair, parts and labor, alternators, starters, brakes, water pumps, parts, labor. Then in Dad's generation, there was what we call labor intensive. Now, labor intensive work is when you have the same talent and skills and expenses, but the profit per build hour is way less. An example of that would be spending 5 hours to install a rear main seal, and the seal is $35 or $40. You didn't make the same kind of money as if you did brake jobs, but you were busy.
Yeah.
So Dad had that kind of work, and we always had that. Well, or swapping an engine, okay? But you could get at the engine. You could hold a small convention under the hood of some of those old Chevy V8s and see all the spark plugs and literally touch them.
Right.
So today, we still have that work, but the vehicles are so tight that you actually have to take the vehicle apart, right, to get at the source. And even if you're getting paid for that, you're not selling parts with it.
It would be like replacing a bulb today.
Yes. I'll give you an example of that, and then I'll go back to the engine. Let's take a bulb. People, they'll spend 1.2 hours to take a front bumper off an Impala, and then spend maybe a $15 bulb or a $5 bulb. And then they spend an hour putting that bumper back on.
Labor intensive.
Right. And that's the equivalent of working 2 hours on a vehicle without selling parts or somebody brought their own parts. This is the financial equipment.
Right.
The example on the engine. Yeah. When Dad could get all the spark plugs, today you have a V6 transverse engine. You try to get at the fireside wall, you're going to pull half the engine out to get at it. Mm-hmm. And even if you're getting paid for every moment, you're not selling parts with it. And what happens is a computer can't tell you whether you're profitable or not. Okay, so the computer, they're never going to know from their work orders. An example, if you did a 2-hour job and you didn't sell any parts and your labor rate was $100, you have a $200 revenue. If you paid your tech $50 out of that, the computer thinks you made $75 profit, doesn't it?
Well, the computer thinks.
75%?
The computer thinks, but the computer doesn't take money home.
No, it doesn't, no. Mm-hmm. And the money's not made on the ticket, it's made or lost in between the tickets. For an example, the first 7 jobs are drivability. Tech A can do the work, Tech B can do the work. I'm Technician C. You put me on that job, it's a comeback at best. So you don't even dare to give me the work.
Right.
Instead of being able to spread 7 repairs over 3 people, you could spread it only over 2. Now the computer is going to add up all the profit on each one of those tickets and show a profit, right? But it didn't know I stood around all day, or the customers may have had to wait longer than they should have for the vehicle. So when people look at the repair orders or even program their computer so it will not print a ticket unless they make a predetermined profit on the parts and labor or the whole invoice, it's a false sense of security. It'll tell you that somebody discounted, but it doesn't mean they're profitable. So when you add up all the work orders, it has nothing to do with profit, as silly as that sounds.
Hi, Carm here, and I want to talk to you about the Napa Auto Care Center program for health insurance. We've all heard the reports about the rising cost of health insurance, but you'll be happy to know I'm here with really good news. The Napa Insurance Center is now offering the Napa National Health Program, and it's saving Napa Auto Care Centers and their employees money, lots of money. In fact, in the first 90 days following the launch of the program, Napa stores and auto care centers and their employees saved over $2.7 million. That's all thanks to the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with United Healthcare. It gives auto care centers access to the national large group rates on medical insurance with premiums discounted up to 30%. Now, these rates are based on the collective purchasing potential of 22,500 Napa locations, including both Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care Centers. And listen to this. The news just keeps getting better. You can choose from four excellent United Healthcare medical plans with varying levels of coverage and deductibles to meet a range of needs. All plans are PPOs, preferred provider organizations, with comprehensive coverage. Because of the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with Aflac, you can have access to supplemental insurance benefits, including disability, accident, hospital, and more, all at a Napa-only discount, up to 35%. The Napa Benefits Center can help you with other group benefits, too, including group life insurance, retirement, HSAs, and more. Napa's National Health Benefit Program is just one of the many reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Talk to your servicing Napa store. For more detailed information about the Napa National Health Program, visit the Napa Benefits Center at www.napabenefitscenter.com or call the Napa Benefits Center at 844-627-2123. And labor-intensive today, and diagnostics with less parts must have a different labor rate.
Yes, the diagnostics, Carm, are over half of a shop's business and growing. Where it's gone, if I had a pie chart to show you, back when Dad was in business, about 81% of his business was mechanical. Mm-hmm. Maybe 11 to 14% was labor-intensive, and only about 5 or 6 was diagnostic.
Yeah.
Today, the mechanical repair, where you make the money, is only about 30%. Labor-intensive is about 14 to 15, and diagnostic is over half. It's about 55% of a shop's business. And the thing with diagnostic work is, A, it requires a higher skill level for the technician. So, number one, you're usually paying higher wages.
Right.
Number two, you're not selling parts, maybe. Number three, you're paying for information, access to IATN,
Diag.net, yeah.
Right, Diag.net. You're paying for information or subscriptions to Ford, GM, and Chrysler,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Dad didn't have to do that. So now you have a higher cost of doing it. You're not selling parts or very little.
Yeah.
And that's the growth part of the business. So what we're going to have to do today is to know exactly what your gross profit dollars are per build hour on your standard work. We're going to set a labor-intensive rate that factors that in. So you get not a penny more than your average profit. And then a diagnostic rate, which will cover the higher cost. And I'll just give you an example, okay? It's a true story, and it's an old one. A husband and wife had a Volvo, and she parked it. And she came out 2 hours later, wouldn't start. Her husband came over, and it ran perfectly for him. He thought she had three heads, and this was an intermittent nightmare that had gone on for a long time. So they'd brought it to a shop on a few occasions, and the shop owner gave up. And they finally sent it to a shop that had a reputation far and wide for doing the most difficult diagnostics there was. And I coincidentally was spending 2 days at that shop. So when the husband and wife showed up, he put his best technician in that vehicle. And he spent 3 actual hours on it and fixed it. And all it was a clip under the dash somewhere. So the issue was, number one, he didn't sell any parts, really. Number two, that technician was being paid $10 an hour more than anybody else, right? Number three, he's using certain equipment that if it wasn't in his hands, it wasn't even being used,
mm-hmm.
Right? And now you're paying for access to information. So if you charge a labor rate, and I'll use $100 an hour. If you charge 3 times $100 an hour, $300, and you paid the technician $30 an hour, the computer thinks you made a fortune and you bled to death. You have a higher direct cost in wages. You didn't sell parts. And you're paying access to for information, which Dad's generation didn't have to do that.
Right.
So we set a diagnostic rate. And we can turn what has been hurting a lot of shops and just reverse that. Diagnostics should be your most profitable work.
So the big change that you had from, when was it, in the 80s when you come up with Labor Factory?
Right, late 80s, yes.
Okay. And again, I became a student of what you were teaching, and it was always 50% labor, 50% parts. And the beauty of you having to change this and to tell your student in the industry is since parts are becoming less important, and think about price transparency. I mean, I don't know if we should go there or not. You've got to rethink what your labor rate is.
Yes. Two things. It's a red flag to your listeners if they have a shop. You should be selling more labor than parts. Okay. Labor should run 53 to 55% of your revenue for reasons that we stated. You're not selling as many parts per mile. And now there's some legitimate reasons to sell more parts and labor. That would be if you're doing maybe heavy-duty truck.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
A lot of dealership items, very expensive parts, Ford, GM, Chrysler, that kind of thing. Or maybe high-end Mercedes, BMW. But if you're typical mechanical repair, you should be selling more labor than parts. The good news, and you'll always sell the parts. It'll always be 100% because the vehicle is not going to function properly without the part needed to make it right. Mm-hmm. If I come in for brakes, it's coming out with brakes. Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it comes out without the labor. So if the vehicles are designed not to sell as many parts per driven mile and expenses continue to go up, we're going to have a labor-intensive rate that covers that.
Cost of doing business today is off the charts. Every time you turn around, there's something else that you have to subscribe to get to. Include, I mean, think of the cost of social media or marketing your business today. Just to get the phone to ring is an expensive proposition. So if what's being charged in the bays isn't covering all of that and including a profit for the owner, that's why there are so many issues and guys struggling. And frankly, happy to see the work that you do to help our industry.
Well, fortunately, I think we've bottomed out. But here's where we need to go and soon. The number one problem for any shop owner that I've ever talked to is people. Finding them, keeping them, and going from there. And as a business grows, they need more of them.
Yep.
And it wasn't as acute in the past. And I'll just as an example, when I was a kid, I loved cars. I liked people that like cars. Cars were my life. You like to hang around with people. And for many, if they could make a living working on vehicles and being around people they liked, it was great. So the industry was subsidized by passion, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Today's generation, my two sons, a vehicle is transportation from point A to point B, and most of their age group. They could care less. They'd just as soon take Uber. So if you're a 20-year-old kid and you say, let me see, I could get a job being a technician and make $20, $25 an hour, not having insurance, of course, and buy thousands of dollars worth of tools out of my own pocket, out of net dollars, and work on vehicles, and I don't even really like to do that. I'm just doing it for the money. Or I can go pound computer keys and make $30 an hour, not buy any tools, keep my hands clean, and the tool is a pen that was given to me by the company. Which way are they going to go? So what we need to do is shops need to become way more profitable, not just for themselves, but so they can pay and attract, okay, the talent they're going to need to take advantage of this marketplace. And there's some huge opportunities that are going to come down the road. As these vehicles become more and more electronic, I envision shops are going to make more money. My long-range vision, shops are going to eventually be selling parts at cost plus 9, cost plus 10, and they're going to make it into labor like other professions do.
And the whole pricing transparency is because of the internet? Is that the main reason?
It's a big part of it. And, of course, there's always people who would shop stores and so forth.
Okay.
But, yeah, the internet has had a big part of it.
What you're saying is if you had to do a 10% over your invoice for the customer and you had the correct calculated labor rate that is indicative of the no parts model, you're going to make just as much money as if you sold them the part. The formulas that you put up in class today, they just made all kinds of sense.
This is the key to it. Every shop today, in my view, needs to know what their average gross profit dollars is per build hour over the course of a year. Once they know what that number is, and we have a formula that'll calculate to the penny. Once you know what that number is, every job that you do that is you know is going to be below average profit, an intake manifold gasket, an engine, a transmission, installing a rear main seal, you would sell those jobs at cost and use what we call the labor-intensive rate. Mm-hmm. And what it does is, this is called, I call it managing to the middle. It just for a second with simple math. If you took 1 and 10 and added it together, it's 11. Mm-hmm. If you divided it by 2, the average is 5.5. Mm-hmm. Well, in a repair shop, they do jobs 1 through 10. They do a lot of jobs where they make less than average profit, oil changes, tire rotations, test drives, et cetera, et cetera. And they do a lot of jobs where they make above average profit.
Mm-hmm.
Brakes, alternator starters. So if 5.5 are the average, what we do is we identify every job where they make less than their average profit. And every single job, you sell a part at cost. And it'll take everything from below average right up to average. An example, you buy a part from a dealership. You're typically getting 20% off of their list. You sell that part at cost. Customer might even save some sales tax, right? And then you use your labor-intensive rate. And what this labor-intensive rate takes everything from below average just to average, just up to that 5.5. You never get a nickel more than your average profit. So in the jobs that you do where you make all your money, you're extremely competitive. All you do is you stop losing money on the below average profits and you take them to average. And I feel with a formula, the math is correct. It'll get it right to the penny. I could feel like I could stand and look an auditor or look a judge in the eye and say, we're making every reasonable effort to never, ever cheat our customer. But you can't continue to have average gross profit or below average gross profit and expenses rise. It's a collision course. And that's why the net profit is so bad.
And one of your points in the early part of your presentation was, you know, when you show this 1.9% net operating income, that the average shops based on your survey is that you've got a job. You don't have a career.
Yes, right.
And I said this to you at dinner, I believe, last night. And some people have come on the show in the last year, and they said, you know, what really opened my eyes to trying to turn my business around is the coach that I hired or the consultant that I spoke to said, so what are your plans for your kids? What do you mean? Are they going to go to college? Absolutely, I want them to go to college. Well, how are you going to pay for that? And that was the knock on the head that they needed, so that they're not making themselves, you know, $15,000 a year, and still there's no money in the bank, okay, in your business, and to start realizing that I have this investment, I have this passion, yet I'm running the business wrong because it's not taking care of me. I'm not taking care of it. It's not taking care of me. How can I get the business to take care of me? And it goes back to you've got to work your numbers. And I think the math that you're talking about, that's this trend in the industry. Less parts, more labor. We've got to adjust that rate to cover the gap where we would have normally made profit on the part.
And the thing that's going to help a customer, if they do that, for an example, let's say they sold the engine at cost and use a labor intensive rate. Yeah. And in that example I used with the engine, the customer actually got a lower bill and saved some sales tax. So when they price the engine, they find that they're buying it at the customer's cost. Now, we're not doing this to flim-flam the customer by any sense. You just price it. One engine, here's the labor, install it.
It's a different way. It's totally a different approach. And at the end of the day, the profit's the same, isn't it, Vince?
Yes. It's just all they're getting is their average profit.
Yeah.
And now, you take them from below average to average.
And so I'm a customer, and I come in and I see that you have a posted labor rate of $125, but what's that $169? My engine's going to go in at $169 an hour? Why doesn't it go in at $125?
Right. It's a great point.
Yeah.
First of all, labor rates and measuring labor.
Because it's a menu item, I think, right?
Well, the menu item is an oil change, $39.95,
right?
An alignment, $95.
Right.
Yeah. That would be a menu price.
Can you make labor rates a menu item or not? You can't really.
No.
Okay. All right.
First of all, I think the labor rate is really for internal purposes only. It isn't what you charge. It's what you get done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The customers, in my view, care about three things. Did you fix it? How much and how soon can I have my vehicle? And our shop is to provide them that great value. How long it took, we don't know. We don't care if you think about that.
Right.
Here's something that I say to shop owners all the time. It's a little tidbit, but it can help them. When I do my classes, I always have a poll. I go, how many of you have ever taken an hour off the job for a customer you just felt bad? And all the hands go up, always. And I go, so here's my example. You have 4 hours in a job. You say to the customer, I have 4 hours in a job, but I'm only going to charge you for three, you know, just because you had a good time. And you're waiting for the customer to say, oh, no, charge me four. And, of course, they never do because the customer has no emotional satisfaction. They don't know whether you worked in the vehicle 2 hours, told them you charged four and worked on four and charged three. They don't know. They can't relate to that. So I say, number one, if you ever discount your labor, you're giving away four times the money that you would have to give away, and you're not going to get any emotional satisfaction from the customer. Okay? So let's say your labor rate was $100, and you gave away an hour. You gave away $100. Let's say you had sold $100 in parts, and you felt, once again, you had to do something special for your customer. what if you gave a 25% discount off the $100 part? Okay? You're giving away one quarter of the money, especially after the invoices. Mr. Johnson, you came in here. I know I held you up. I know this is longer. I feel terrible. My owner or my manager is not going to like this. I'm taking 25% off this $100 part right now. I'm charging you $75. It's visceral. You can see it. It's an emotional, right? You've given away one quarter of the money, mm-hmm. and the customer actually has a higher satisfaction. Now, the average shop makes about 2% net profit, as we said. Mm. So shop A gave away $100. And that's it. Shot B gave a 25% discount off the part. It's $75 less that he gave away, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At 2% net profit, that the shop that gave away the hour of labor, he would have to do $3,750 more sales at the average net profit of about 2% to make up for that one error. So there's fundamental things that occur over and over and over. I didn't mean to get too much into that.
I appreciate it. I mean, when you respect math and you actually know how to work the formulas and you figure out some creative new ways to do what you want to do, not that you have to discount and take a, you know, it's a, well, I feel like I want to help the customer in some way. As long as it's not every transaction. Does it become a sport for the customer the next time they come in? They're going to see what they can do to get the next discount?
Exactly. That's why I retract what I just said. I totally agree. I got to get the heel out of my mouth.
That's okay. I think hey, look, come back. Let's just do some more, you know, sit by the fireside Vin Waterhouse chats, and let's just keep digging in to see if we can create better and stronger service professionals out there.
I'd love to do that, and if we can come up with little ways that help the shop owners improve their profit, that I believe is the panacea to solving our people problem.
Yeah,
shop owners have to increase their profit so they can afford to pay more.
Yeah, earn more,
and pay more, and everybody
earn
more, wins.
Earn more and pay for it.
Exactly.
Hey, Vin Waterhouse from the Waterhouse Group. Thanks for being here, Vin.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.